to everybody. Firstly,
recording in progress.
That we started, excuse me, at 13:00. I just spoke to the excellent committee secretary now of why it's come to be. Because obviously the house is rising at about 13:00, and so people won't have a break for lunch. So we've been at meeting since 9:00 to 1:00, and immediately we moved into another meeting. We should have organized this meeting for 1:30 or 2 p.m. So I regret that. Ultimately, I take responsibility. I had misunderstood. I thought the meeting of the house was going to end before 1:00. So we have a difficulty, colleagues, comrades, that some people are still stuck in the house, which hasn't risen yet. Not until 3-4 minutes ago when I was also connected there. So they may be taking part in debates there, or excuse me, putting questions rather. But I suggest we go ahead, because nobody raised it as a problem in the chat group. And if that had been drawn to our attention, we would have said, okay, postpone the meeting to 1:30. But in Kuruleko, we've learned our lesson here. And we won't do this again. We're sorry that this has come to be what it has. And ultimately, I take responsibility primarily, and in Kuruleko, secondarily, but also ourselves as a collective. We could have said, hey, guys, it's not reasonable. Give us half an hour for a break. So obviously, if people are having their lunch while they're in the meeting, in Zoom meetings, of course, that's doable. So be it. So welcome, everybody. When I last checked, there were 4 members of our committee. How many are there now? There's nobody from the DA, eh? Is that right? In Kuruleko, am I right? Nobody. Oh, Dennis is here. Good. Okay, shall we get going? Once again, my apologies, Dennis. We botched up in Kuruleko and I. But so did you. Nobody said in the chat group, but we're finishing the house at 1:00, and we've been meeting since 9:00, and surely we should have a half an hour break. But I'm going to allow, no doubt it's allowable because I can't zoom in on your houses and what you're doing there, to have your lunch while the meeting's going ahead. So there we are. Now, colleagues, the first thing we have to ask is, oh, welcome, Yanga. I saw you on the platform. I don't see anybody from SARS, but soon it'll join us. Can we have, Yanga, your input on the bill? They're being voted in the House now. There's an informal briefing, and we will act. We've consulted Frank Jenkins of the Legal Services Unit. Now we proceed, and he has approved of the process we're doing. But if people, law experts here in the committee, and people who love engaging in nitty-gritty of rules and technical issues, which hold back, in my view, a lot of the good work of Parliament, can you engage with Frank? Okay. We've done this before since 1994. We get an informal briefing on the bill. Right. Over then to you, Yanga, and your team, please. Welcome, Yanga. It's a pleasure to see you. Not that you and I will agree on many things, but you're damn good. So you're very good at your job, and that's great. Go for it, Yanga.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members. But I think I must allow my DG, Mr. Ismail Momonia, to lead. Thank you.
Oh, DDG. Yeah. Hi, Ismail. I didn't see you on the platform. That's why I didn't welcome you. Not because I disagree with you even more. Okay. I've been in meetings since 9:00. Momo, forgive me. Right. Let's go for it, Momo. Oh, Momo, you've never been one to be shy about talking.
I'm not sure Momo is here, Jay.
Oh, okay. So who's going for it first?
Okay, Jay. I can go first because I thought Momo has joined.
Yeah, Momo will join us.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, members and the general public. The current tax bills are the 2021 tax bills. They give effect to the tax proposals that were announced in the budget on 24 February 2021. And also, they give effect to the tax proposals announced because we have a second batch for the COVID-19 as well as the unrest in KwaZulu-Natal. So the current tax bills were first published for public comment. The rate bill was published on 24 February 2021 together with the budget. And we published the tax bills again on the 28th July 2021. The closing date for public comments was 28 August 2021. We briefed the Standing Committee on Finance on 17 August 2021, and then public hearings were held on 31 August 2021. And then 7, 8, and 9 September 2021, we held public workshops on the tax bills. Because of the parliamentary process and the voting, the first date that we were given for the response document was 13th October by the Standing Committee on Finance. By then, Parliament was closed. So we only did our response to the Standing Committee on Finance on the 10th of November 2021. And as I've said, that changes relating to emergency tax measures contained in the second batch of the 2021 draft TLEP are also included on this bill. So the final 2021 TLEP contained all the changes together with the changes made as a result of emergency tax measures. On 11 November 2021, the bills were tabled by the Minister in Parliament. Standing Committee voted on the bills on 24 November 2021. And today, 30 November 2021, we're briefing the Select Committee on Finance. Can I please go to slide 7? Because there, that's where the slide 7, changes to the 2021 tax bills after the introduction by the Minister in the National Assembly. Slide 7, the previous slide, please. The previous one? Yes, slide 6. Chair, I wish to bring to your attention that after the introduction of the tax bills by the Minister of Finance on the 11th of November, there were changes that were made in terms of the Section 11 of the Monetary Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. And this is due to the fact that after the bills were tabled, before we did a report on the 24th of November, we received comments from taxpayers regarding two clauses in the bill. Clause 56 of the 2021 TLEP dealing with clarifying the hypothecation of collateral within collateral lending arrangement, as well as clause 41C dealing with the clarifying the definition of contributed tax capital. Based on the comments that we received, we requested the Standing Committee on Finance. The Minister of Finance wrote a letter to the Standing Committee on Finance to postpone the effective date of these two provisions so that we can have ample time to interact with the stakeholders regarding the impact of the proposed amendment. It is important to note that these proposed amendments are meant to be tax avoidance measures. So we were told that even though there is an understanding that they can be tax avoidance, however, it may impact legitimate transactions. So in order for us to interact with the stakeholders regarding the impact on legitimate transactions, the proposed amendment in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act was to postpone the effective date by a year, to 1 January 2023. Our TTG, Mr. Ismail Momoneat, has joined. Maybe Momo will want to add in this regard. Thank you, Chair, before we can proceed. Momo?
No, Chair, and afternoon. And sorry I joined a few minutes late. Apologies, Chair, honorable members. But I don't think I have anything to add to what Yanga said on this.
Yanga? We've said to you. Thank you, Chair. Momo should retire on the sidelines and watch the committee meetings as part of the. I'm not saying it's driving his job, but he mustn't be like a dinosaur like me. He might ask, what am I doing here? Okay.
I agree with you, Chair.
Yeah. Except that you look younger than a dinosaur and I look older than a dinosaur. But let's not talk about that. Younger, go right ahead. Your boss, whom you're terrified of, so you can go ahead. I'm teasing. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to start with the rates bill, Chair, whereby we are only citing the key important proposals that most of the stakeholders went to Parliament on the Standing Committee on Finance regarding the rates bill, the TLAP and the TALAP. The increase in excise duty on alcohol and tobacco, Mpo and Chris are going to lead in this regard. Over to you, Mpo and Chris. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Mpholo Gote from Tax Policy. In with regards to the changes that were made on the rate bill, we increased the excise on both alcohol and tobacco by 8% in this financial year. And the comment that we received was that the increase is too high, and in terms of the policy guidelines that we use, in terms of adjustments we make to excise duties, that the proposed increase takes the excise burden above the current guidelines. But we have noted that over the past couple of years, excise duties have been increased. We have been increasing excise duties above inflation, and all these increases are also taken in the context of this the fiscal framework. And we have also announced that we'll be making reviews to the policy guideline with regards to that. And another issue was the issue of heated tobacco products. We adjusted the way excise duty on heated tobacco is done. We tax it the stick, similar to the way cigarette is taxed, as we had indicated in the previous financial year. And then we're also doing some work with regards to the taxation of this new generation product or electronic cigarettes that will be published. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Those were the key proposals that were included in the rates bill that we received most comments on. And I think when we do the public consultation process here, because there were comments that we received regarding illicit tobacco and all that. And coming to the TLAB, Chair, with regard to employment, individuals and savings, there were three proposals in this regard that we received most comments on. The first one is applying tax on withdrawals of retirement interest when an individual ceases to be a tax resident. This was widely publicized also on News 24, that in the 2021 draft TLAB that was published for public comment on 28 July, we had a new proposed amendment whereby we introduced a new Section 9HC, where this section was aimed at addressing the proposed changes where this section was meant to address this issue. That is, when an individual ceases to be a South African tax resident before she retires and becomes a tax resident of another country, that individual's retirement fund interest may be subject to tax in that other country due to the application of the tax treaty between South Africa and that other country. The example here maybe is the treaty with South Africa and the UK, whereby the UK treaty will deem the individual to be tax resident in the UK, and as a result, the retirement interest will be taxed in the UK. And the issue here was that we would like the retirement interest to be taxed in South Africa because that taxpayer benefited from the tax deductions in respect of contribution to the retirement fund. In order to address this, the following changes were included in the 2021 draft TLAB is that we made a provision similar to the capital gains tax, whereby we had a deemed disposal rule. That is, when an individual ceases to be a South African tax resident, the retirement interest will form part of the assets of the individual and will be taxed in South Africa. And that individual will be deemed to have withdrawn from the fund on the day before he ceases to be a South African tax resident. This principle is similar to the principle applicable to capital gains tax that we have throughout the Income Tax Act. And then we had another provision, that is, when an individual leaves the country but the money still remains in South Africa, the tax will be deferred up until such time the individual takes the money outside South Africa. The next slide. We received a lot of public comments in this regard. And then there were articles on News 24 And then because we listen chair to the public consultation process, and based on the public comments received, and also due to the fact that there was an issue regarding the bona fides in the text treaties and the treaty override that this provision may have. And in view of the case that was the judgment that was passed in Netherlands, we had to sit back and review the judgment that was passed in Netherlands, which was addressing a similar provision regarding a treaty override. Based on that international judgment, we read it and we listened to the comments. And as a result, the proposed amendment, that is the introduction of new section 9HC, has been withdrawn from the 2021 TLEP that was tabled by the minister. In order to address all the complexities that were raised through this, further amendments will be considered in the next legislative cycle. So this new section 9HC has been withdrawn from now, and then it will be considered in the following legislative cycle. Next slide. The next slide, dealing with capping abuse in the employment tax incentive chair. We all know that the tax incentive, the ETI, was introduced in January 2014. And throughout the years, we have been making changes to the ETI Act so as to cap abuse. So lately, it has come to our attention that some taxpayers have devised certain schemes to claim the incentive in respect of individuals who do not work for them, but rather engage in training programs using training institutions with no employment characteristics. In order to counter this abuse, the following changes were included in the 2021 draft TLEP, that is, we're making changes in the ETI Act, whereby we said work must actually be performed in terms of the employment contract as envisaged in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And in view of the fact that the proposed changes were aimed at capping abusive schemes, the effective date was made retrospective to 1 March 2021 before the legislation comes into effect. The next slide. Based on the comments received, the following changes were made in the 2021 TLEP that was tabled by the minister. First of all, the effective date was postponed to 1 March 2022. It is important to know that in all the tax avoidance measures, the effective date, we always make it retrospective. But here, because there was uncertainty regarding the draft legislation, and also we did not want to stop legitimate claims, so we postponed the effective date to 1 March 2022. And then there were technical changes that were made in the definition of employee in this regard, so as to clarify the provision. The next slide, Chair. The last one on the individual is strengthening anti-avoidance rules in respect of loan transfers between trusts. In 2016, the anti-avoidance measures were introduced to cap the tax-free transfer of wealth to trusts using low interest-free loans. And it is important to note, Chair, that whenever that we introduce an anti-avoidance measure, is followed by the further changes in the legislation, because taxpayers keep on devising schemes so as to avoid paying taxes. And in 2017 and in 2020, further changes were made to counter new attempts to undermine these measures. So it came to our attention that there were other further tax avoidance schemes between trusts where the founder of one trust holding the original asset is related to one or more beneficiaries of the other trust to which the asset is transferred. So in the 2021 draft TLEP that was published for public comment, we introduced a connected person test in this regard so that the anti-avoidance rule will apply in respect of any loan directly or indirectly provided by another trust in relation to which the beneficiaries and founders are connected persons. And also in view of the fact that the proposed changes were aimed at capping abusive schemes, they were made to apply retrospective, that is on the date of publication of the draft TLEP for public comment, that is 28 July 2021. Next slide. After the public consultation process, it was decided that the proposed amendments dealing with strengthening anti-avoidance rules be withdrawn from the 2021 TLEP that was tabled by the minister. And in order to address all the complexities that were raised through the public comment process, specific amendments will be considered in the future. So, Chair, we are finished with the individual text. The business text Chris and Haley will lead in this regard on the Section 23M and access loss restriction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Yanga. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the public. My name is Haley Reynolds. So the first measure that we included in the TLAB 2021 was to strengthen the current rules that we have that basically limit excessive interest deductions, and particularly in respect of debts that where the debt is owed to persons not subject to tax. So these rules were introduced in 2013 and have applied ever since the 1st of January 2015. And the main aim is basically to limit excessive interest deductions in respect of debts owed to persons not subject to tax in South Africa, and particularly if the debtor and creditor are in a controlling relationship. On the 26th of February 2020, so in budget last year, there was a discussion document that was published that sought to review our current rules, and those were reviewed in relation to what was proposed by the OECD BEPS project that was led by the G20 or requested by the G20. And so we did that review and did the comparison, and the what was proposed in TLAB this year was to strengthen the current rules that we have to ensure that our corporate tax base is protected. And so the five measures there were some of the changes that we proposed. So one was expanding the meaning of the term interest for the purpose of these rules. So that was essentially to try and stop taxpayers from using other expenses or labeling interest as other expenses to try and get around the rules. It was also proposed that currently South Africa is the only country that uses a formula that determines the percentage of, okay, first let me say, sorry, so how the rules work is they limit the interest based on the percentage of earnings. And currently in South Africa, our percentage of earnings was implemented at 40%, but it adjusts with using a formula depending on how the repo rate goes up and down. We're the only country that does that. So we have proposed to move to a fixed ratio rule, which is set at 30% of earnings. When we originally introduced these rules, we did think that 30% was a better ratio using the analysis at the time. So we do have precedence for this thinking as well. We've also proposed a measure to reduce opportunities to avoid the rules of back-to-back loans. So what a back-to-back loan is basically if the two parties in the controlling relationship send the loan via an independent third party is another way to try and circumvent the rules. Then there was also a small adjustment made to assist the real estate investment trust industry as their taxable income and the way they calculate it is slightly different to other industries. And then lastly, what was proposed was a change in the way, so the current rules depend, whether they apply to the debt or not, depends on whether there's zero tax. But obviously, companies can try and route the payments through countries where the withholding tax rate is the lowest at 5%, and then they're not subject to the rules. So we wanted to try and equalize.
Everyone or just me?
That's it. I think it's stuck on
that. Yeah, it's on your side, Haley. Okay, now we're back.
Okay, thanks. Can we go to slide 19, please? Thank you. All right, so after the public consultation process, a few changes were made that was tabled by the minister in order to take account of the comments received. So one of the largest comments we received was that, and just to remember as well, that this was one of the two base broadening measures that was introduced as part of the corporate tax package in conjunction with lowering the corporate tax rate. So taxpayers raised a lot of concern that the timing is not the best. given the COVID pandemic, that companies might have lower earnings, which would affect the way the formula works for interest limitation rules. And they were concerned about companies having to take on additional debt during this period. So what was decided in the end is that the changes were kept in the TLAB, but the effective date, essentially the rules will come into operation on a date on which the tax, so on the same date on which the corporate tax rate is announced to be reduced. So it'll be announced by the Minister of Finance in the annual budget. So it wasn't introduced on 1 April 2022 as was originally proposed. There were also changes made to the definition of a controlling relationship in the 2021 TLAB, and this was based on comments that taxpayers sent through to us as well, because the proposal that was made did not adequately take care of the concerns that we were seeking to address. And then on the last point, to recognize that the tax base, we had initially proposed that the equalization rate I was mentioning should be based on the corporate income tax rate, but we accepted that the tax base for that is different to withholding taxes. And so subsequent changes were made to use the standard withholding tax rate of 15% rather than the corporate tax rate of 28%. Then the second base broadening measure as part of the corporate income tax package was to restrict the set-off of the balance of assessed losses in determining taxable income. So currently what happens when a taxpayer determines their taxable income is they can look to prior years. If they have any accumulated assessed losses from prior years, those can be fully offset against their current year income. And any unutilized balance of those assessed losses can be carried forward to future years of assessment. So basically, taxpayers only become liable to pay tax once they've earned taxable profit and their assessed loss balance is depleted. So the reason for providing for this deductibility and not having restrictions is so that companies can smooth the tax, it basically smooths the tax burden for companies whose primary business is cyclical in nature and not in line with a standard tax year, as well as for startup companies that are not profitable in the early years of trading. However, what we've seen over the past 2 years is that there's been an international trend to restrict the use of assessed losses, and by doing so, enabling the reduction of the corporate income tax rate. So in 2020, initially, it was announced that in order to improve South Africa's competitiveness and reduce the appeal of base erosion and profit shifting, as well as encourage investment and promote economic growth, that there was an intention to restructure the corporate income tax system over the medium term. And to do this, the intention is to broaden the base and reduce the corporate income tax rate, and importantly to emphasize that it would be in a revenue-neutral manner. So it wouldn't mean a loss for the fiscus. It's trying to improve the efficiency of the system while not losing any tax revenue. So as part of the corporate tax package in this year's TLAB, it was proposed that the corporate tax base be broadened. And to do this, it was proposed that the balance of assessed losses would be restricted, and they would only be able to be set off against up to 80% of taxable income. So essentially what that means is if a company has 100 Rand of taxable income in the current year, and they have more than 100 Rand of assessed loss balance, they would not be able to set off the full taxable income. They could only set off up to 80 Rand. So they would be left with 20 Rand of taxable income on which corporate income tax would apply 28%. So the effect of this restriction is that only companies that would be in a positive taxable income position before setting off the balance of assessed losses would be affected. And also important to point out is that the overall tax liability will not change. Basically, what will happen is that a portion of the tax liability will be brought forward. Next slide, please. So after having consulted with the public, the following changes were made that were tabled by the minister. And this is similar to what I just mentioned in relation to the other base broadening measure. So we received concerns that the timing was not great and that it wouldn't be the best time to restrict assessed losses given the economic environment that we find ourselves in as a result of the pandemic and the unrest that we experienced in the country. So as I stated, for the interest limitation rules, we've put the similar wording in terms of the effective date in this one. In addition to that, which was not, so an issue was raised in addition to the timing issue, and this was in respect of some companies facing cash flow challenges, and they may not be able to, they might not be in a position to be able to pay tax once they become profitable tax-wise. So in order to cater for companies that have cash flow difficulties, it was proposed that we introduce a de minimis threshold beyond which the proposal takes effect. So as I said, the aim is to cater for a variety of companies that may experience cash flow challenges at different times. And so what was proposed is that to the extent that the balance of assessed loss exceeds 80% of current year taxable income, companies will be able to set off the higher of 1 million or 80% of taxable income when calculating their tax liability. Thanks, Chair.
Who's next?
Thank you, Chair. The next slide deals with clarifying the hypothecation of collateral within collateral lending arrangements. This is one of the provisions of the clauses whereby after the bill was tabled, the Minister of Finance requested that this provision, the effective date, be postponed by a year to 1 January 2023 instead of 1 January 2022. Chair, I think in 2015, you were still the chair, we introduced new rules in the Securities Transfer Tax Act, whereby we provided relief that allowed for the tax neutral transfer of collateral between the parties to a collateral arrangement, provided that certain requirements are met. So at issue here is the rehypothecation of collateral where the bank or broker or dealer intends to use the collateral received through a tax neutral collateral arrangement for trading or as a security for its own borrowing. So in order to curb this, because there are requirements, because this was a tax neutral, like a tax deferral, one can say that it was an incentive because the tax was deferred. So there was a tax neutral transfer. So if there was a tax neutral transfer in the beginning, then you cannot use that for other than the purposes that were stipulated in the provision. So we wanted to clarify this in this 2021 TLEP, to clarify the policy rationale that was there in 2015 when we introduced these provisions. So in the 2021 draft TLEP that was published for public comment, the following changes dealing with it included. Firstly, we said the shares of bonds transferred as collateral in terms of collateral arrangement may subsequently be used for collateral and not be used for trading. And then in order to ensure that the shares are only used for collateral, we had the requirement that the transferee should enter into a contractual arrangement and agreeing that the shares may only be used for collateral. In view of the fact that the proposed amendments were aimed at capping abuse, the effective date was made retrospective, that is the date in which the TLEP was published for public comment, that is 28 July 2021.
I think, Yanga, you disconnected or you reconnected. Hello? Can somebody else from Treasury come to the rescue, please?
Hello?
Yeah, you're back. Okay, good.
Yes. Okay, thank you, Chair. So following the public comments received, the following changes were made in the bill that was tabled by the Minister on 11 November 2021. We took away the requirement that the transferee must enter into a contractual requirement arrangement, and the effective date was made prospective to 1 January 2022. And also the reuse of collateral that will qualify for special tax relief, which was not subject to CGT or STC, was only for the following regulated transactions, because during the public consultation, they advised us that there are regulated transactions whereby they are allowed to reuse the collateral, that is a repurchase agreement in terms of the South African Reserve Bank, complying with Regulation 28 of the Pension Fund, as well as securing overnight cash payment in order to comply with Basel III requirements. Chair, this is one of the provisions that after the bill was tabled, we received a lot of comments. Based on the comments received, the issue was that will impact on legitimate transactions. And as a result, we requested that the effective date be postponed by a year instead of 1 January 2022 to 1 January 2023, Chair. And the final bill that will be passed by Parliament will have the effective date of 1 January 2023, Chair. Thanks. The next slide. The next slide deals with clarifying the definition of contributed tax capital. We call it CTC, Chair. This concept came into the Income Tax Act in 2008. It was a consequential amendment in the Income Tax Act due to the changes that were made in the Companies Act, whereby the concept of CTC was introduced in the Companies Act, so we had to introduce it also in the Income Tax Act. So it came to our attention that some companies are exploiting the current provisions of CTC by allocating CTC on the basis of an alleged share premium, but not to all shareholders holding shares in the same class of shares. So in order to address this, on the draft TLAB that was published for public comment on 28 July, proposed changes were made to the definition of CTC to clarify the principle that shareholders within the same class of shares should share equally in the allocation of CTC as a result of a certain distribution. Next slide. The TLAB was published for public comment. We received a lot of comments in this regard. And also, because we were trying to stop abuse, the changes were made retrospective, that they were made to apply on the date in which the TLAB came for public comment, that is 28 July 2021. Following the public comments received on the draft TLAB, first of all, the effective date was made to be prospective, that is, instead of 28 July 2021, it was made to apply from 1 January 2022. And also, we allow the anti-avoidance measures, we made them not to apply in respect of listed shares. And the rationale for excluding listed shares from the anti-avoidance measures is that throughout the Act, for instance, listed REITs, if the share is a listed share, or if the bond is the listed bond, or if the REITs are listed REITs, we normally provide tax relief because whenever something is listed in any stock exchange, there are regulatory requirements. So there's less chance for tax avoidance in that regard. So the rationale for only excluding listed shares from the anti-avoidance measure was based on that. But based on the comments received after the bill was tabled, we have to postpone the effective date to 1 January 2023 so that we can look at ways of accommodating unlisted shares in this regard. Thank you, Chair. The next slide is carbon tax. Charlene, we're updating in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Yanga. Good afternoon, Chair and members of Parliament. So there were three main issues that we dealt with as part of the TLAB process. The first one was clarifying renewable energy premium beneficiaries under the carbon tax. So the carbon tax provides for electricity generators that are liable for the tax to offset the costs of additional purchases of renewable energy against their carbon tax liability. This provision was provided to basically address concerns around double taxation due to the IPP program. So essentially, it was brought to government's attention that the carbon tax was not clear on the intended beneficiaries of this concession, and there was request for clarity on whether electricity that is wheeled through Eskom and self-generated by taxpayers could actually claim the deduction. So we basically provided in the 2021 TLAB. Sorry about that. So in the 2021 TLAB, we basically provided clarity on this. We clarified that to the extent that there are electricity generation activities and additional renewable energy is purchased, then where there are PPAs or power purchase agreements that actually exist, then those taxpayers can claim the deduction in terms of the PPAs. So this was published for comments. Taxpayers raised were basically welcomed these clarifications. However, there were some requests for further clarity in terms of the PPAs. They cited that there were different types of power purchase agreements that can exist for on-site electricity generation and off-site. So in the case of on-site is when there's a solar PV panel in a particular plant and electricity is generated, and then it can also be wheeled in through the grid. So after this consultation process, we basically amended the EM of the PLAB to provide these examples to clarify that it's only off-site PPAs and additional purchases of renewable energy that can be eligible to claim this particular deduction. Next slide. The second issue is in terms of the Carbon Tax Act, we provide for emissions that are sequestered or saved, basically storage of emissions by trees and carbon capture and storage. So we allow for these emissions to be deducted from combustion emissions of taxpayers. So in 2020, the Department of Environment published guidelines for this particular deduction and to basically enable them to certify these sequestered emissions. These guidelines covered sequestration by the forestry, paper, and pulp sector, and it included sequestration of emissions in harvested wood products, which is essentially furniture and other materials from these industries. So in the 2021 TLAB, we had proposed a limitation of the sequestration deduction to only forest plantations. There were concerns around the permanence of emissions sequestered in harvested wood products and being able to actually monitor this, as, that these products are still in the system and haven't decayed, essentially. Next slide. After the consultation process with both the industry as well as with the Department of Environment, we proposed these changes. And we then... taking into account the engagements with the Department of Environment and taking into account the proposed methodologies for determining sequestered emissions in harvested wood products, we proposed changes to the 2021 TLAB to expand the scope of sequestration to include harvested wood products, and this would be limited to the paper, pulp, and print activities. There is a particular methodology that has been proposed to measure the carbon flows from of related to this process from the forest to the paper and pulp plant, as well as then to the manufacture of harvested wood products. And it's scientific, and for future carbon tax periods, we would also consider together with the Department of Environment and industry around developing a 100-year accounting approach for this and to develop specific product decay rates that can be taken into account in terms of harvested wood products. Next slide. Under the carbon tax, we have a schedule 2 where we list all the activities that are subject to the tax, and essentially that's the tax base. These emissions are reported to the Department of Environment, and it's a requirement under the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Regulations. And the Schedule 2 is based on the Annexure 1 of the Greenhouse Gas Reporting Regulations. Annually, these regs are updated to include new activities that required emissions reporting, as well as to change thresholds about for activities that would now need to report their emissions. So in September 2020, the Department published amendments to the Greenhouse Gas Emission Reporting Regulations, and to align with the process of the Department of Environment, we had proposed the amendments to Schedule 2 to include some of these new activities and for them to come in, for the tax to apply to them and come into effect on the 11th of September 2021. 2020 aligned with the reporting regulations. After the consultation process and engagements with industry as well as with the Department of Environment, we proposed changes to change the effective date for these new activities to 1st January 2021. This is also aligned with the Department of Environment and the reporting period, which will also take effect on 1st January 2021. Thanks, Yanga.
Yanga?
I think the next item is Talab. France is here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Welcome, France.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, Honourable Members. Thanks for having me yet again. So to begin, let's move on to slide 33. So at the moment, you can get a tax deduction for certain donations to public benefit organisations. In order to get that tax deduction, you need to get a receipt. And what SARS has detected is that some PBOs, public benefit organisations, the shorthand we use, are in fact issuing receipts when they're not empowered to do so. And then we also have a situation where some unscrupulous individuals are essentially forging receipts from recognized PBOs and then essentially using them to claim illegitimate refunds from SARS. So the idea here is that at some point SARS would like to move to third-party reporting so that just as your employment details and some of your interest that you receive is already indicated on your tax return when you open it, we can do the same thing for donations, which would improve controls across the board and mean we wouldn't have to do that many audits in the space where we could detect people who are issuing receipts when they shouldn't be. So commentators accepted this as a legitimate thing to do, but there was a concern about the impact on smaller PBOs, and that's what the last bullet on the slide is saying, is we're well aware of that. And we are looking into mechanisms to assist smaller PBOs so that they can also come on board with this initiative as we roll it out. So next slide, please. Moving into the customs and excise space, we had some small amendments that we were proposing to increase, let's call them de minimis rules, rules where SARS wouldn't have to collect on errors that were made. Currently, the amounts there are very small. They sit at around 2 rand and 5 rand, and the suggestion was to improve that to 100 rand. And that was, again, welcomed. But the question was raised, well, then what about VAT on imports? Shouldn't we be doing something like that there too? And whilst we agree that makes a good deal of sense and it's something we should be looking at, unfortunately, that then ripples out into a bunch of additional consequences in the value-added tax system. So whilst we certainly accept this is something we should be looking at, it's not an easy change. And so we are stepping back and have withdrawn this particular proposal so that we can try and work through some of those consequences. Moving on. Right. This one got a fair amount of comment. This is something that was put in place last year. Essentially, if SARS asks for information and doesn't get a response, and we ask for it again and don't get a response, SARS is now empowered to issue an estimated assessment, which has always been the case, based on the information that we have. But what is new is that you cannot object or appeal against that estimated assessment until such time as you've provided the information that was requested. And if you think about it, that makes a good deal of sense because how can anyone come to a conclusion?
There you are. Sorry, France, we lost you for about 45 seconds. Can you repeat what you said?
All right. Chair, which slide did you lose me? At the beginning of this one or at the close of the previous one?
Just go to the
I think it might be your connection that's failing.
Whose connection? Mine.
Indeed.
All right. Sorry. Then it's mine. Yeah, there's an electricity cut off here. So it's mine. Sorry, I apologize for that. Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Sorry. It's my fault, France, not yours. Not my fault, the municipality's fault, not load shedding. It's a municipality. Yes. On behalf of Mayor Mzitha Bola, I apologize.
Not a problem, Chair. I'll just rewind very slightly because I think it's useful for you to be on top of this one as well. So this is a development that we had last year. When SARS asks for information from a taxpayer, and we don't get a response, and we ask for it again and still don't get a response, SARS is empowered to raise an estimated assessment, which has always been the case. But what was new from last year was that the taxpayer concerned couldn't object or appeal against that assessment until they'd provided the relevant information, and SARS had decided not to take it into account in adjusting the assessment. And the thinking there is that you need all the information on the table before you can take a proper decision. And so that's what this rule is intended to achieve. Now, obviously, in the first year of operation, we spotted some issues. And one of them was something of an edge case that doesn't come up too often, but let's assume SARS asks for this information quite close to the end of the 3 or 5 year prescription period. The taxpayer then ignores us for a while and then comes to the realization that they do need to give us the information. There's a possibility now that we can't give them an extension to give us the information because they've run out of time. Or in fact, they can't ask us for a reduced assessment again, because it's now after the prescription has operated. So those were things that we needed to fix. And so we proposed that there be an additional 40 days that SARS could give such taxpayers, even if prescription was in play. So we could push past prescription to assist them. And that was the proposal. And then after some public comment and the workshops and so on that were held, we worked through some of the issues that had arisen. One of the questions was, well, what standard is the taxpayer being held to here? And so we've gone with reasonable grounds. So that's now made explicit in the legislation, previously implicit, but now it's clear. Moving on to the next slide. And then the questions were, well, what happens if this, what happens if that? So we've restructured the legislation slightly just to make it clear as to what could be happening. I mean, option one is SARS accepts the information that's provided. Of course, everyone's happy at that point, no further action required. Option two is SARS accepts some of the information, but we disagree about others, in which case you will get a partial change to your assessment, and then you can object and appeal as required based on where SARS has the disagreement with you. And then finally, it may be that you provide the information and SARS is not swayed by it, says, no, that information, in fact, doesn't prove what you think it does. And so we reject your request for a reduced or additional assessment based on the information. And clearly, at that point, it's then reasonable to allow the taxpayer to come in the door and object and appeal against SARS's refusal to change anything. So that's all now clear in the legislation. And then one last tweak that was actually proposed by one of the commentators, which was that, well, this may all be happening before prescription or during this extended period, but you do need to allow a bit of time afterwards to allow SARS to think about these issues. And so, in fact, you should extend prescription to allow for the additional or reduced assessment the taxpayers proposed. And on reflection, that made a good deal of sense. So that is something that has been worked into the legislation now as well. And so hopefully we now have a system that works better for everyone involved. And that's it from my side. Thank you.
So you're done as a team. Am I right, Treasury? Hello?
Yes, Chair, we're done.
Okay. All right. Look, I don't want to keep my video on because I've got load shedding and you have a problem here that my battery is fairly low on my iPad. But look, firstly, let me just see. Treasury's done. I see no hands up. Am I right, into the left?
I saw Mr. Ryder's hand. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Ryder, is anybody else wants to raise anything?
No? It's on Mr. Ryder's.
Okay, fine.
Oh, there's okay. Mr. Moletane as well.
Okay, Mr. Moletane, thank you. Right, go for it, the two of you, Dennis and then Simon.
Whoops, thank you very much, Chair. After the dressing down I received earlier, I thought perhaps it's best to wait for the invitation to make comment. Thank you, Chair. Chair,
what dressing down?
No, I'm talking about our earlier meeting. You weren't hearing that one. It's fine.
Yeah, that person's here. She can put her hand up. So. I won't mention her name, but it starts with D and her surname is M. She can rebut you. She has rights to speak. Okay, go ahead. Don't provoke her.
Thank you very much, Chair. Look, Chair, I want to start on a lighter note and just say, Ms. Hemraj, your heading that you had on your slides, I'm just trying to get it in front of me. It said, clarifying the definition and scope of carbon sequestration limitation on biological sequestration to forest plantations. It was a good try, but I'm afraid that the prize today for the most confusing heading goes to, I think it's Ms. Reynolds, for clarifying rehypothecation of collateral within collateral lending arrangements. I think congratulations to both of you for sterling efforts at confusing the of us, but Ms. Reynolds wins today's battle. Good. Chair, right, thank you very much for the opportunity. Let's get a little bit more serious. I noted that there were lots of comments about from Treasury today and from Mr. Tomasek as well, from SARS, saying that, you know, engagements or feedback received, et cetera, has led us to have a look at these other, at these things. And I think it's fantastic that Treasury is, and SARS are being fairly accommodating in some of these instances. I'd just like to know in what forum those discussions are happening in, because, you know, it would help us tremendously as Parliament. We're complaining that we're not getting sufficient interaction with civil society, with organizations, with the general public, when we're calling for interactions and comments on our bills. But it seems that there's kind of a backdoor process that people can follow as well. And we're not really informed about them until such time as Treasury chooses to actually make amendments based on those discussions that they're having. And it's just, yeah, I'd like to know what forum those things are happening in, because it would be useful to us certainly to be somewhere part of those discussions, and to maybe emphasize the fact with people that are entering these fora that there is a forum here in Parliament, and people should be, you know, chatting to Parliament and trying to get us on their side as well, timeously and perhaps not after the fact. Now, I do realize that many people, and certainly South Africans are world famous for this, we do things in the last minute or 2 days after the last minute, and most people's reactions will only come after the laws are passed. But you know, as I say, it seems to be sidestepping the parliamentary process, and I'd just like some comments on that, please, from Treasury. Then just on to slide 8, where we spoke about the alcohol and the tobacco excise duties. I must say that this time around, I have a little bit of sympathy for the alcohol and tobacco guys, because of the impact that the COVID lockdowns and the restrictions on the sale of alcohol and tobacco, certainly during the first hard lockdown, have had on their turnovers. So I have some sympathy for them. But I did note as well that there was a comment, and I'll quote it, that says, given the incidence has remained above policy guideline in recent years, et cetera, et cetera. Input from all stakeholders will be considered once a review has been concluded. If I can ask, Jeff, that we get some feedback from the budget, the review that's been planned to deal with that excise policy framework. So perhaps not to wait until the next round of discussions that we have formally with Treasury, but to invite them to a meeting to give us the outcomes of that excise policy framework discussion that they're planning to have. Then I want to move on a little bit to slide 13 and a few others afterwards, and just, you know, point out to Treasury and I guess to SARS as well, tax avoidance, and you speak strongly against about having an anti-avoidance stance, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing wrong with tax avoidance. Tax evasion is problematic. Tax avoidance is not always problematic, and I do understand that there's certain loopholes that need to be closed, but yeah, just hoping for a more moderate approach in some of your language about being anti-avoidance. Avoidance is merely using the the given tax laws to benefit. So, that's the point I wanted to make. Then on slide 13, it's come to government's attention that some taxpayers have devised certain schemes to claim the youth incentive for people that are not actually working for them, but that are undergoing training. Now, I'd like a little bit of expansion around that, because I think training should be seen as a good thing. And I hear what you're saying about there isn't a normal employer-employee relationship there. But, are these kind of interns or people whose education is being facilitated through a company, and the company is therefore claiming some benefit, or is it just a random abuse of the system? Because I think that, where a company does take on a young employee and pushes them through some sort of education and training, that should certainly be encouraged, in my view, and certainly to upskill the person, providing there's a reasonable opportunity for that person to be employed full-time by that company at a later stage, but also providing that there is a formal relationship between the two. So can you just give me some more clarity on what people are doing there? Because it sounds like it's tax evasion to me. So it's not even avoidance. It sounds like it's evasion. People creating relationships where they aren't was the picture that you drew. Then I think to Ms. Reynolds, you spoke about the adjustments to Clause 20. And I was wondering, you mentioned quite a lot when you were talking about Clause 19's adjustments about the tax neutral situation that, but what is the anticipated outcome of the adjustments to Clause 20? Because it looks to me like we are certainly bringing ourselves into line with international trends. But what's likely to be the net impact of that? And I mean, I'm not going to hold you to an exact figure to the cent, but if you can give me kind of a thumbsuck ballpark, I would appreciate that. Ms. Hemraj, the clarity on carbon tax issues is, I think, welcomed. There have been a number of accusations that government is targeting certain industries and attacking low-hanging fruit, certainly when government is probably one of the largest emissions creators in the country. Have you experienced a lot of that, and people challenging the carbon tax on the basis that that they are being unfairly attacked? Mr. Tomasek, thank you. The cross-referencing of PBOs and the amount of donations. So PBOs declare annually in order to retain their NPO accreditation, and they declare an amount that that has been donated to them each year. How difficult is it to cross-reference that with the donations relief or tax relief that that taxpayers are claiming? Is that a possibility? I mean, is that something that can be done? I think it might be quite tedious, but I do think that the computer technology certainly exists and so on. And then just on a personal note, the ability to submit info is an important part of it. And I can tell you right now, I'm having an inordinate problem with SARS e-filing to try and submit the documents that have been requested in terms of the fact that I was told by SARS that I owed them a certain amount and I'm trying to justify why I don't. And SARS e-filing is just not letting me do it. So, yeah, there's just my grumpy note at the end. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dennis. For those of you who are new to this committee, Ms. Hemraj and Ms. Zeno, you may not know us, but culture here is slightly different. I think maybe it's something to do with the notion that life is very serious. We don't have to make it over serious by the way we conduct ourselves. And while there's a lot of, well, you could start with the chair. The chair is quite a silly billy. So that also gets members to be the way we all are collectively in different ways. So it wasn't meant as a slide to Ms. Hemraj and Ms. Fennell, what Dennis said. He was just being teasing and facetious. But he is raising a point that we have repeatedly raised with the National Treasury when it comes particularly to tax rules. We are no tax experts. For those of you who don't know, I've been chairing committees since 1998. And I have never, believe me, colleagues, come across a more difficult set of bills to process. I don't want to repeat what I said 100 times before, but because there are new people here, that we find it especially difficult to understand some of the more technical concepts. And the onus isn't on us. We are politicians. We're not technical experts. We do not have, unlike the National Assembly Committee, a technical expert on tax. So our two staff members that deal with content advice and research are growing in that area. But they are technical experts with degrees and so on. So we battle with tax bills. And worse still, we get these bills so late in the year and Parliament has to rise. And in this particular year, as we all know, it's been exacerbated by the elections and the sudden, most of us didn't expect the Concord to decide what it did. So we are where we are. We have to finish these tax bills, otherwise we can't have a budget in February next year. So where we do not understand technical concepts, it will mean delaying the process, and then the onus is on Treasury, because we're not voting on anything we don't understand. Personally, I also need a bit more time to read through the bill when we get the version, the final version, and to go through this set of slides. But I think Dennis wasn't trying to be rude or anything. Once you get used to us, you'll see it was just semi-facetious, but half true, because really we all feel the same way. All right, it's not directed at you personally. It's the technicians in your department. Okay, having said that, over to you, Simon.
Thank you, Chair. My clarity is from SARS. On the issue of alcohol, the illicit trade in alcohol products is a very serious concern for this government, both in terms of undermining the public health and harm reduction objectives. What kind of efforts are used by SARS and the law enforcement agencies to address this challenge? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, who's there for any more questions, comments? Does anybody from the staff want to say anything? No? All right. Well, just a few quick questions, comments, rather. Firstly, on tax avoidance, basically, from what I can tell, the ANC feels that this really should be tightened. Estimated that billions leave this country through tax evasion and tax avoidance. And those billions, it's basically theft, really. It is theft, actually. Well, certainly with tax evasion. And also, morally, with tax avoidance, I mean, really, it's the same thing. Just that they use the loopholes in the law. So National Treasury is always having to update the legislation, we have to pass that legislation and so on. But the private sector points rightly to a lot of corruption in the public sector. And of course, we all oppose corruption. But the private sector itself, I mean, a lot of them, they're also avoiding and evading the law. That is also criminal, really, especially evasion. But morally, what's the difference, really? Why don't people just pay what they pay? Why are people trying to avoid paying? So really, and tax evasion and avoidance have been taking place during the apartheid era as well. From what I can tell, it was only in the later years that the apartheid government caught up with this. So basically, it's just wrong. And the majority party, as I understand it, wants you to tighten the tax avoidance room so that they can't do these things legally, these people, and those who... The previous committee, across at least three parties, I don't know what the DA's position is now, all supported various inquiries, particularly you'll remember, we had on this matter. EFF was quite heated up about this as well. And we, you know, agreed at some stage around 2018, I think it was, that we will get PwC and all these big shots that come and lecture to us here on tax bills, you know, to ask them, do you think it's morally right what you're doing, even if it's technical and it's legal? And I don't know, there are more, you and Ayanga and others will know more. I don't know why on the world scale all these bodies don't do something and tackle these heinous behavior of PwC and so on, whoever they are, who help these people to avoid paying the taxes. It's avoidance. People are avoiding paying tax. What's good about that? Why don't they just pay their tax? MPs for once can't be accused of, we pay the tax we're supposed to pay. So really, I think you must do more to close the loopholes, colleagues from National Treasury. I agree that you should not, by doing so, undermine legitimate transactions that take place and put it under a wrong bracket of tax avoidance. But if it's legitimate, then it's legitimate, and let it be. But help, and, I mean, whatever the word is, sorry, I withdraw. But please, we can't have these loopholes. Please tighten those loopholes and make tax avoidance tax evasion. Please, we can't afford that. Secondly, can you explain what's the Netherlands case? Thirdly, this matter is not something that falls directly within the particular matters we're dealing with now, or this bill specifically. But right now, at midnight, we're going to get a 81% increase on petrol prices, which follows on the increase last week. I mean, what are the implications of that for, you know, people's ability to pay their taxes, for the fiscal framework as a whole, and so on? Is there anything Treasury can tell us beyond what we know from the media, why these petrol increases and so on? Then it is a bit confusing. You see, sometimes National Treasury comes across and is also accused of being dogmatic, right? But on the other hand, when it comes to tax bills, one notices that you often retreat once you've had further submissions in the public domain. So the question that arises, because some of these are so technically complex, it is very hard for us to, with our limited skills, technical skills, actually be clear about what's the right thing to do. So as we've done in the previous 5-year term, we refer the relevant contesting parties to meetings in Tshwane, in your offices of Treasury, wherever you want to have them. And then you come back with positions of the National Treasury and the parties that are contesting National Treasury's, aspects of National Treasury's bill. Then we say, okay, we heard both sides, this is our view. But often we like to get a consensus. So basically what I'm saying is, on the one hand, it's good, Treasury, that you do make more concessions than you normally presented as doing. But on the other hand, it does mean that before the issues come to the National Assembly through a bill or bills, why don't you settle these things through the gazetted version of your bill and the discussions and negotiations that takes place thereafter? The other issue to remind members is that we're in a disadvantage because where the bill is processed by the NA, subject to 75 bills, they have the public hearing, and then the bill that comes through with the MTPPS is the final version that they've processed. So we are left out in the loop, and until recently we used to be part of that, but hey, let's not go back there. Some people in this very committee are arguing that it's a wrong, hey, let's not go there. We've done it for years, there's no rule against it. Frank Jenkins has made that clear, and the legal services unit, even then people contest it. So we must chew. We don't want to have joint meetings with them, even when the rules allow it. So let's be where we are. So now we really don't know what happened. We know from Yanga's input and others that what happened between the original version of the bill in the National Assembly and what has come to pass as the bill that is being voted on right now in the NA and will be with us in the next 24 hours. So as far as Dennis's suggestion that we should be party to those discussions that take place, well, strictly, we can be party to them provided it's after the bill is introduced to Parliament In our case, the National Council of Provinces, we can only be party to it from tomorrow. So if there are any negotiations and members want to attend them, I don't see a problem. But we can't intrude. You see, we hold the executive to account. We can't be involved in shaping bills before the executive brings them to parliament, because then we are having oversight over bills that we've partly shaped through our own intervention. So we can't have it both ways. So if there are members of this committee who want to sit in on any negotiation that will take place after we hear the public at the public hearings, then I think there's no problem. We can arrange for that, for people to attend it. No problem. The next thing then is, I want to say, colleagues and comrades, I like that Treasury is now bringing new faces, fresh faces, and contrary to the stereotypes about the finance area, where only old white males dominate, and Treasury has been accused of that for many years, it's women that are coming forward now, and the notion that, you know, men are sort of really the experts and so on, and dominate the financial sector. It's been debunked by National Treasury, and I really welcome that. Thank you, National Treasury, for that. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to ask questions? Oh, nobody. Okay. Can you reply, National Treasury?
No, thank you.
I see, by the way, Dennis has got something here. Let's see. It is only the NA committee public hearing, and I'm happy if there are other fora, I'd like to know what they are. I don't know what he means by that. Okay, but fine, we can talk offline. Okay, can we go ahead? Right.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think, you know, like you say, I think tax bills are by their nature quite complex and hard to follow. And I can assure members they're also hard to follow for many of us. And that's why you have a, you know, that's why we have a multidisciplinary team also to deal with it, because ultimately, because the tax laws, the basic laws are old, Income Tax Act and so on, and what happens is that the acts get changed incrementally over time, so that you're always adding and deleting. So if you look at the bill itself, it becomes extremely difficult, if not impossible, to follow unless you really tax expert already and a legal tax expert, but that's why we try and cover it through the explanatory memo to try and put in plain English what the issues are. And I think you are right, the onus is on us to come and explain then what changes we are making, and bear in mind that in most instances the changes are, as I said, incremental. We are making it against a policy that's already there, but now and then we might have a new policy proposal like we had on a carbon tax, and, you know, we start from scratch, in a sense, to explain the entire bill. So but so that's the context that you have, and that's why I think it's difficult at the best of times, I think, for all of us. I think the second point to note, Chair, is that because they're market sensitive, they, you know, it's unlike the expenditure protest where there's been some sort of consultation with departments, within cabinet, and so on what the spending proposals are, and there's an indication at MTPPS and so on. The tax proposal, when it's announced, there's no consultation with those who are affected beforehand. So what happens is that we make the announcement and then we consult. So the first consultations that take place is after the February budget, when we meet with often the those most affected or directly affected want to come talk to us. Because I should add, Chair, that even they don't know what, even from the announcement, because the announcement might say this tax will be at that rate. But what they don't know yet is exactly what's the tax base, how is the legislation going to read, and so on. And until and unless you know that kind of gory detail, you don't really know how it's going to impact on your company, whether you may be exempted, whether all of your your income will be taxed and so on. So that's the first part of the process. And it leads towards bills that TLAB and TALAB bills tend to be published then in July. We, on the rates bill, generally it's just easier because if we can, we focus it on just the changes to any rates and thresholds. So it's just a number change. And we try and publish that bill on budget day because it just reflects a change of the date and perhaps small changes to the tax base. But you see all the bills together. So, but most of the complex stuff then is left for July. When we then publish it for comment, and we then run the process together with SCOP. So Mr. Ryder, it's not a secret process. The people who write to us also submit to the SCOP. Sometimes there's just some timing delays that depends whether Parliament is sitting or if you have local government elections, it may disrupt the cycle for Parliament. But if there's no problem, then Parliament tends to also have a first hearing in August, and they take the same submissions. And so what we do with the submissions is we then respond to, well, they come and they present to Parliament, but we prepare a detailed response document, which is also available, which will be available on from the draft bill, what changes are we making. And I want to add, these bills are different also because they draft bills when we publish them in July. And the hearings that the SCOP has are around the draft bills. I should add, Chair, that in some cases, as I've mentioned before, the draft bills or the first hearing, in some years, we've had a joint session with both SCOP and CCOP. So you see from the start what the proposals are. And then what happens is the SCOP processes the bill, they have the response document, and we then, the minister introduces the bill formally, which he does in October. It tends to coincide with MTBPS, but not necessarily with it, but most years it is. And then normally with the SCOP, it's only a few changes that are made because formally it's a money bill and there's a process. If we got everything right at the hearings, so when Yanga and others have said taxpayers responded like this, what she meant, I think, was, but she can speak for herself, is that those were the submissions we got, both at the SCOP process and after we published the bills. And people, as I said, tend to send it to us directly. We often, if the matter is more complex, before we do the response document, we do have meetings, sometimes with some of the associations or taxpayers who raise something strongly. I think in the CCOF process, there have been years where members have also attended some of those hearings, but you know, these are relatively open processes. We could invite members of SCOP as well, if you want to be alerted to those meetings, as we don't have a problem with that. Chair, now the other issue that you raised is that Treasury retreats. You know, we don't see this as retreating or not proceeding. As I said, because the tax announcements are a surprise, okay, there's no pre-consultation, we can only test whether some proposals make sense in the detail after the bill is published in July and people can respond to it. And that's why it's quite an essential part of this process that we take account of the comments. Sometimes we make amendments. Sometimes we delay because clearly the issues may be more complex and clearly need to be looked at again and will take a longer period. And of course, sometimes we reject the proposals. So if you take, in this case, the alcohol industry or the tobacco industry may not like the approach we've taken, well, that is a policy judgment call And whilst we accept that there are, you know, the illicit trade, and that needs to be fixed up by getting SARS and other authorities to act on the customs or excise side, but doesn't detract from the policy position taken on what the rate of the tax should be. And of course, because it's a judgment call, when it comes to a rate, I think anyone affected will tend to argue to bring it down. So that's always an issue. So even the further work we're doing is just a guidance to help bring stability to the industry. But the minister is free to make an announcement and then change the law, and subject to Parliament approving. Obviously, that's how the process would work. So, Chair, I think I've answered most of the issues on the process and the consensus approach. I've said to you, Chair, I know in the past, that the attempt is not for us trying to get a consensus, but rather to say, hearing the inputs, to make an assessment on, in terms of the tax principles we have in the system, what's the way to move forward, and taking into account the objections or the difficulties that may get raised, we try and understand the language. And Honourable Ryder, you are right. Some of the terminology that's used can win prizes, and I'm glad that you want to judge between Ms. Reynolds and Ms. Ramraj on who's won the prize, but I'll leave that to you. But Chair, I'll stop there. Younger, do you want to come in, or Chris, or Haley, or Charlene, and Paul? Just the specific questions that were asked. I've just tried to answer the process questions.
Yeah, Momo, that's been quite helpful, actually. I mean, I know most of that, if not all of it, but it's a reminder to the newer members. But anyway, look, I think you've really been provocative. Ms. Hemraj and Ms. Reynolds might come toying outside your house, because you're selling them out as the boss. Okay, that is fine. I think they understand what's said in semi-facetious and semi-serious senses. Okay, Younger, you're on.
Thank you, Chair. So with regard to the public process, we issue a media statement after we have received all the public comments, whereby we publish that Treasury will be doing public workshops. And we also send the invitation for public workshops also to the parliamentary officers, Zakele, Nkululeko Mangweni, Alan. We do send the invitation to the public workshops. This year, the public workshops were held on the 7th, 8th, and 9th September. So I think we had more than 150 attendees virtually in those meetings, whereby we were debating the comments received on the TILA. That is the open process that we follow, sir. And then on the next issue, on the tax avoidance, I just wish to say that when you are in the tax side, like, since the famous statement by Lord Tomlin in Duke of Westminster versus IRC in 1953 to say that every man is entitled, if he can, to alter his affairs so that the tax attaching under the appropriate act is less than it otherwise would be. Since that famous statement in 1953, the tax and international landscape has shifted with regard to the issue of tax avoidance. Hence the introduction of BEPS in 2008, because BEPS was meant is base erosion and profit shifting, whereby multilateral companies are using the current loopholes in the Act so as to shift profits. So what I want to say that even though one can say that tax avoidance is legal, but since that famous statement by Lord Tomlin in 1953, the tax and international landscape has shifted so as to close loopholes in the tax legislation. Hence, we've got BEPS, and you are attending all the BEPS meetings. And South Africa is part of that. So it's whereby taxpayers are using the current provision, which is against the policy rationale. Yes, the provisions are there, but they may be against the policy rationale or what is intended for. Hence, we come strongly on tax avoidance. And coming to slide 13, which is dealing with ETI. Training, yes, if training is there, but you must use, there are provisions in the Income Tax Act whereby training is allowed, whereby there is a learner and an employee agreement, and that is Section 12H. So the view is that if the current provisions in the Act do cater for instances of training, you rather use the current provisions in the Income Tax Act, which at this stage is Section 12H, rather than using the current provisions which are in the ETI, which are not meant for that, so as to change it, because ETI was meant to provide work. And then Section 12H is meant for training, hence learnership agreement. I'll end there. Thank you.
Who's next?
I think it was me, Chair, in relation to Clause 20.
Okay, go for it.
Thanks. So, firstly, I'd like to thank Mr. Ryder for my award, but in the interest of the joking spirit of the committee, I'd like to ask if he was concentrating, because it wasn't me that presented that slide, but I'm happy to take the award. So if I understand the question correctly, it was asking what contribution to the fiscus the interest limitation, well, the changes to the interest limitation rules will make. And from our estimations, we've estimated that it will increase revenue for the fiscus from between 1% and 2% of corporate income tax revenues. And of course, that goes together with the other base broadening rule that would collectively offset a reduction in the corporate tax rate. So the idea of the package holistically was to be revenue neutral. Thank you.
Okay, next please. Look, just come in as one person stops. No, for me to intervene.
Thank you, Chair. If I may then come in on some of these SARS-related questions. The first one that I believe is to my address is around the cross-referencing of receipts for PBOs. So we can do that, but there are a couple of complications here. So if you take the case where people are forging receipts, we'd be able to spot that we've got receipts for, let's say, 10 million, but the PBO says it's got income from donations of 7 million. So at this point, we know there's a 3 million difference, but we don't know where that 3 million is and which taxpayers have claimed it, which reporting on a third-party basis per individual donor would solve. You also have some PBOs where they have mixed activities, where they have some activities which would qualify for 18A receipts and some that do not. So again, you'd need to split those out. So to answer Mr. Ryder's question, yes, we can do that kind of exercise. And yes, it is tedious. And unfortunately, it doesn't always get us quite where we need to be to counter some of the abuse we're seeing. On the point about submitting info, I'm very sorry to hear that. And it's unfortunate because I know my information technology colleagues have been working very hard to try and improve the channels that are available for submitting documents using e-filing. So I think that might be useful feedback to pass on through SARS, the people you normally deal with at SARS, so that we can take it up and just make sure that the improvements that are necessary can be made. On the question around what SARS is doing about alcohol and illicit alcohol, unfortunately, I'm probably not the best person to speak to that since I'm more on the legal side rather than the illicit economy unit. I'm aware that between 2016 and 2019, we had 800 odd seizures of illicit alcohol. So clearly there is work being done in that space. I'm also aware that there was a recent media statement where I think it was in Mpumalanga, we had found 15 million rands worth of illicit alcohol. I think it had been marked, it had originally been destined for export, but was being relabeled for use in the domestic space. So that was a problem. And members who've been following the media will be aware that we've been clamping down on abuse of duty-free alcohol by certain diplomats. And that has been something of a difficult task, but again, I think it just goes to show that this is an area that we are active in, although I'm afraid I can't give you too many of the details around that. I think those were the three that fitted in with me. So I'll hand over to the next person.
Thanks, Franz. Chair, I'll comment on the question on the carbon tax and the comment from Mr. Ryder that some entities may feel that they are unfairly attacked. Just to respond quickly on that is that on the carbon tax, it was a new tax and no one likes taxes, but it took us 10 years before the tax was actually implemented. So it was a 10-year consultation process on the carbon tax. And in the design of the tax, it's very comprehensive in its coverage in terms of the different types of emissions. And because it's broadly across the economy, then it basically covers all the big emitting sectors from electricity generation, liquid fuels, industrial processes, and some mining emissions. So taking into account the 10-year consultation process and the current design of the tax with a whole range of tax exemptions and the low rate, I think we felt more attacked at the end there, but that's a joke. We took into account a lot of the comments and we basically designed the tax in a way to provide the space for the transition that needs to happen in terms of our climate change commitments. Thanks.
Anybody else? No. All right. So are there any comebacks from members?
Yeah, I think from my side, I think that we've had good answers today, and I just want to appreciate them. Thank you very much.
Okay. Even with this hemorrhage and wrongly accused Ms. Reynolds, right. Okay, good. Okay, then we're done for now. We'll have the public hearings and take things further. We're moving on to the next item on the agenda. Those of you not required to be here, you... excuse me, you can leave. So we go to the Finance and Sector Laws Amendment Bill. Is the team from Treasury here? Nkululeko, who's here from Treasury on that bill? Hello, Nkululeko.
Hi, Chair. I don't see the team as yet. Mr. Davidson, but Cindy is here. I'm sure you can give the committee some light on that.
Cindy?
Chair, I'm here for that bill.
Oh, right. So why don't you say so? Okay, fine. Okay. So basically, colleagues, look, Treasury, do you want to say anything immediately?
So, Treasury, sorry, I also just didn't get it. Is this for that financial services bill?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chair, I think the last time we met, there were issues that came up. I'll get Mr. Davidson and him to join. I think they maybe weren't aware of the time. But we provided, I think, a response document.
Yeah.
Which and we met with BASA, as you had requested.
Yeah.
So I think we dealt with their concerns. And we can go through the document. I'll just get Mr. Davidson, as I said, to come in. But just to say, just process-wise, I think, if I remember, there were... So the document just sums up what we responded to the last time.
Yes.
To comments by the Free Market Foundation.
No, we're not going to go through that document again, but
okay.
I think since then there would have been engagements with yourself and BASA and anybody else who was at variance to what you said, given in the NCOB process and what has come of that. So let's start with BASA. What happened there? And by the way, colleagues, you have got, Nkululeko, you sent it out, the progress report on the insolvency bill being managed by the Department of Justice, right? Janine sent us a letter at about 12. Nkululeko, you forwarded that to members, right?
Yes, I did, Chair.
Okay. In case they haven't read it, can I quickly Momo deal with that aspect because it's there before us, because we sent it out fairly late because we got it fairly late, right? So basically the letter says that, look, the process Let me just find it. Sorry about that. I meant to save it and I didn't. Yeah, status of development of insolvency bill, colleagues. It's from Janine Badner-Kiyose. I hope that you're very well. In the last meeting of the Select Committee on Finance, I was requested by the chairperson about the status of the work of the Department of Justice on a new insolvency bill, right, which has been underway for some time, and to provide a brief response to it. I have just now received confirmation from the DDG that they, that's the justice person, continuing with work on the insolvency bill, which would replace the existing one, obviously, the 1936 Act, number 224 of 1936, and they are in the process of seeking approval to publish the insolvency bill, okay, for public comment. Obviously, it would therefore be desirable for submissions regarding how workers' salaries and benefits should be protected in the event of insolvency, and not only in respect of banks, of course. That was the point for such rates to be considered and appropriately addressed in that legislative process in a very well-considered way. Right. Okay, that's it, basically. You got that right. So any questions on that? Nope. Right. Those who have an interest will pursue that matter there, right? So the next issue then is on Basel, what's come of that? No more? Quickly, in a nutshell. Oh dear, is Momo here or am I cut off?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so give us a brief overview of what happened with BASA, please.
Okay, so Chair, we had a meeting with them. I'm just trying to get my own notes here because I didn't know this bill is coming up right now.
I saw the agenda. I don't know what's going on. Kulinik was very efficient. I'm not sure how come Janine, she wrote to us only this morning, would have forgotten. But, I mean, it's been there on the agenda.
I think the time got changed, so maybe they...
Oh, I don't know about that, yeah. The time was always 1 to 4. Can I just say that as far as 1 to 4 is concerned, this was done about 2-3 days ago. Can we explain? You can't blame Nkululeko, certainly for once the chairperson.
No, I'm not blaming anyone.
No, I'm not you. I'm talking to my colleagues in the committee.
Yeah.
I'm saying to colleagues, just note that the parliamentary programming section, on behalf of the powers that be, I apologize to you. What has been happening is they've been shuffling around the program of the NCOP as a whole. So for now, you must know we're not finishing anymore on the 10th. We're now finishing on the 15th. Right? The next 2 weeks was added about 3 days ago. Was it on Friday when I drew in Kulalekwa's attention to it? So now we are under slightly less pressure. But because of the three-day rule, we'd like to finish these bills before the three days before the House sits. Then again, sittings have changed, I think, because of factors beyond the control of the powers that be, because committee chairs are suddenly saying, we can't finish certain bills and we can't finish other bills, right? So they've been waiting on committee chairs to come to them and whoops. So that too has complicated the situation. But now it seems there's no negotiations now. We're going to rise on the 15th. Okay, colleagues? And then it may be that there were some changes, but what I know about 3 days ago or so, it was clear it will be 1 to 4. Okay, having said that, because the House is not sitting this afternoon, okay? So we thought we'd get better participation and higher attendance if we met while the House otherwise sits. Okay, thanks. I'll explain to everybody, not just you, Momo. Fine. So basically, the procedure here is just tell us what's happened since then. Then I will throw it open to members, and then we'll start looking at the policy issues. And if there's time, we'll start processing it clause by clause.
So, Chair, look, so we met with BASA. Remember that firstly there were issues which got related to resolution and curatorship, and we just showed that these were different processes in the law, and that the concern that they had, I think we convinced them that that is a standard which gets issued in terms of the Act, and that therefore there was no problem with the law itself. What we agreed to do is to publish the draft standard that we have in mind on the termination of agreements. So it will be done as a discussion document in the next week to before the bill is enacted. We said to them we would have that ready. So it wouldn't really affect the legislation as such. That was, I think, the issue with BASA and and they accepted that, I believe. Okay. I know that they want to go back to their lawyers and so on. Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm done, Chair. So I know they wanted to check with their lawyers and so on, but I think the matter was resolved.
When did you meet them?
We met them soon after the last session, Chair.
All right. Yeah, that's fine then. Nkululeko, have you got a letter from Basa recently? Nkululeko? Nkululeko seems to be having...
No, I did not receive any letter from Basa. The last letter that I received in connection with the Basa issue was from National President.
Yeah, fine. Okay. All right. So in that case, members, do you want to respond at all to what we've got from Treasury and what we got from Janine and Momo? No? All right. Now we're going to look at the broader policy issues. Now, remember, we got submissions from, and we went through this already, so I don't want to cover the ground again, the Free Market Foundation, and then there was Basa, and of course, there was COSATU. Treasury responded to that at the last meeting, then we responded to that. And some of the stakeholders were there, if I recall. So we are more or less ready now to proceed with the bill. So is there anybody who wants to say anything before we start with that? Colleagues? No? All right. Let's go to the bill then. Are there any broader issues they want further discussion on? No? Okay. So then I'm going to the bill. Sorry, I should have prepared this. We finished a bit earlier. In regard at least to the earlier, I thought we'll take a bit longer with the three bills. Hang on. Right. So on the Financial Sector Laws Amendment Bill, just give me 1 second. I can't seem to find it. I apologize for this, colleagues. Bills. There we are. 2021. Here we are. I looked at it yesterday, I see. Right, there we are. So, colleagues, we turn to page 2 to amend. It sets out what the bill is. It's linked to the notes at the end. So on that, are there any comments? It's reasonably accurate from what I see, okay? Clause 1. I take it that if people want to intervene, they will. So I'll go through it. Clause 2. Nkululeko, just draw my attention to any hands that go up. Clause 3. Clause 4 on page 4. Clause 5, I apologize for that. Clause 5, that's a reminder of something. Clause 6, Clause 7, Clause 8, Clause 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. We're on page 9 now. 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. We're on page 14, 41, 42. Page 41, page 15, sorry, 43, 44, page 16, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49. We're on page 17, 50, 51. We go on and on. Amendments to the part 2, then we go to part 3, resolution measures, that's on page 23. Part 4. Colleagues, anything so far? Part 5 starts on page 28. Part 6 is on page 29. On page 33, colleagues, page 34, page 35, page 36, part 7 starts the deposit insurance fund, part 8 is on the same page, then we go on to the various clauses, you get to 53, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61. Then you go to chapter 12A, resolution of designated institutions, part 1, page 39. Page 40 goes for the various parts up to part 6. Part 7 is appearing on page 41. Part 8, also on the same page, and then the short title. Then there's a memorandum, right? So basically, can we have a mover and a seconder for the bill, please?
Sure, I must say that you've caught us a little bit unawares today with the clause by clause reading. I also wasn't aware it was on the agenda. I don't think
it's there on the agenda, but fine, you want to vote on whatever way. Okay, there's no problem. What we can do, colleagues, is treat it as informal. It's a lot because we've been at meeting since 9, but to be fair to Nkululeko, he sent us out a few days ago, and it's there on the agenda. What we didn't say is that we're voting on the bill formally. You're right about that. So maybe we can postpone that. It's just that I really would like to focus more time on the tax bills because of how complex they are. But you know what? We've got an extra week. And finally, you know what, Dennis? You're right. If we have to seek an exemption for the three-day rule, so be it. This has been an exceptional year. So I don't think we should formally vote on it. I think you're right. Okay. Because the report's not ready anyway. I thought we'll just vote on it informally today. I mean, agree on it informally. But I think let's even leave that open. Okay, let's do that informally so far. Let's put it like this. Let's summarize like this, Dennis and Colin. Informally so far, we're fine with the clauses as they are. But as we're not voting today, as always, it's open to changes that can come in the next 24 hours. Is that okay, colleagues and comrades? Is there anything people want to say? Is there any hand up? Nope. Is there anybody wants to say?
Happy with that, sure.
Whose hands up? Yeah, actually, you're right, Dennis. Why are we plunging? What I meant to say, actually, it's my fault. I should have said informally, are we okay with the vote? And I shouldn't have said, you know, vote on it. You're right. So I would like to suggest, colleagues, given that we want to table this bill next week to separate it from the tax bills, and to separate it from the Division of Revenue bill, because it's the same lot of us that, involved in that too. What do we want to do? One option is, if I'm correct, in Pulalik, we're meeting from 9 to, what is it, 12 tomorrow in the Appropriations Committee. Am I right, Dikeledi? Is it right? We're meeting tomorrow. From 9 to 12. Dikeledi?
Can't be, Chair.
Sorry?
We can't be, Chair. We're presenting to the provinces tomorrow.
Yes, Chair. That's how the committee say it's programmed.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that means, and tomorrow afternoon is there plenary in Kulalekwa? Does anybody know? In Kulalekwa, are you there?
Yeah, there's no plenary tomorrow, but I do know that many provinces are having their discussions on the appropriations bills, the adjustment bill.
No, I know. Well, normally they have it in the morning. Are they having some in the afternoon?
There are different times, if I may come in. Provinces have given different times, so it's not the same.
All in the morning. Okay, good. Let's leave tomorrow afternoon. Can I suggest, right?
No, the select committee is 10 until 1. I don't know if it will be possible because some will be having their consultation at 11 and stuff, but the program saying 10 until 1.
Okay. So what Nkululeko suggested to me last night was that if it was okay, we'll vote at 1 on the bill and so on, but let's leave it for tomorrow. We will do it sometime on Thursday at a time that doesn't clash with any other commitments we have in any other committee or with the plenary. So Nkululeko will negotiate that offline. Is that okay? Shall we leave it for that for now? Oh, man, this meeting is very uncooperative.
I think you talk over us, so yes.
No, well, then all you have to do is ask you a question or silence. I don't understand what you're talking over you. So that's an excuse, Fanny. I asked, is it okay? And I kept quiet. Nobody's answering.
Right, it's okay, sir.
Right, Fanny has a problem. You can write to the speaker about that, about the bad cheering. That's fine. Thank you. Bye.
Chairperson agreed.
Ah, Mama Rakhane. That's a great honor. Bye.
Bye, Chair.
Bye, Chair.
Okay, I assume the meeting is then adjourned.
Yeah, it is adjourned. Honorable Du Toit, the chairperson is gone.
Funny. Yeah. Good.
Hi, Lord.
Bye. Not touching her.
Let us work hard.